Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome.
I'm Megs.
I'm Hannah.
And today we have a case that is actually ongoing
right
now.
Oh, okay.
So it happened a long time ago. It was kind of a cold case, and now it's a non-cold case.
Non-cold case. Got it.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me is it's not solved.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could potentially be.
Okay.
I think we're moving in the right direction.
Okay.
So this is the case of Justin Turner. On the afternoon of March 3rd, 1989, the police arrived at the residence, and Justin's parents said that he never came home from school. Witnesses said that Justin actually never got on the bus to go to school, and he was marked absent from his classes. Justin was in kindergarten and would have been expected to walk to the neighbor's house to get on the bus that morning. The neighbor went outside to get her grandson on the bus, but she never saw Justin, so she just assumed that he was maybe homesick or something that day. During the search for the young boy, witnesses overheard his father, Victor Lee Turner, asking law enforcement what would happen if someone harmed Justin.
Okay.
Like, what if they killed them?
What?
And what if that someone was in their family? Then what would happen
to
that person?
Wait, he asked that?
Yeah.
That is sus as fuck.
It's really weird, right? I mean, as soon as I read that, it's like all the red flags are popping. On March...
Baby popping.
Yeah, baby popping. Because, I mean... Truthfully,
no,
who would
weird.
Ask something like that?
That's the last thing you want. That's going through your brain, not specifically like that, but you're like, oh my God, what if somebody hurt him?
And what if they're a family member?
Right, but you're not thinking, like, actually thinking that. You're not like, maybe I should ask the police what would happen if that was the case, because that's fucking weird.
To be completely honest, like, if a family member is involved, you should basically want to end that person.
Right.
At that point in time. I wouldn't be like, hey, what would happen to
no,
them?
And if I had a feeling it was somebody, like, if I was like, this person is giving me these, like, feelings, like, I've been nervous about them before, I would just outright say it. Like, here, this person
could
probably
you look into
could.
It?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. So on March 5th of 1989, 5-year-old Justin Turner was found.
Oh, he's only five.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and his body was found inside of a cabinet in his family's small camper.
Oh.
His father, Victor Lee Turner, was the one who discovered him while the vehicle was parked near their residence. Justin had been reported missing 2 days prior to the discovery. The police and community had done an extensive search. Footage of a news segment, which was captured by reporters at an NBC affiliate station based in Charleston, WCBD, shows Victor wearing jeans and a plaid shirt. He opens the door to the family camper, goes inside, and then he emerges and he's very upset. He quietly said, "My son's in there." He was later seen sitting on a porch near some firewood, burying his face in his hands. When Victor had entered the camper, he discovered Justin's body within seconds, and then he didn't even check for life. He just turns around and walks back out.
Right.
So, affidavit said, quote, "The specific location inside the camper where the body was concealed by the offender highly suggests familiarity with the camper and its floor plan."
Okay. Yeah, see, I was kind of wondering.
Mm-hmm. It was noted that the Turners were the only ones who had keys to that camper. Justin's body had been stuffed into a storage area beneath a dining seat. So
you would have to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was no signs of break into the camper?
There was not.
Okay.
And there's kind of two weird things that immediately jump out here. You know, Victor entered the camper and was only in there for a few seconds before finding Justin's body.
It's a lot more than, like, two at this point. There's a lot of weird things happening.
Well, yes. It's just two, like, immediate things that jump out. But it's like, it almost feels like he knew exactly where to go.
Yeah.
And that's not just something that I'm kind of just saying on my own. This was a lot of speculation from witnesses as well. The police had already searched the camper more than once, and they were not able to find Justin. Campers aren't insanely large.
Right.
So it's like, okay, how could they have searched this? That had to have been the shittiest search.
Yep.
If they were not able to locate him, and then all of a sudden his father walks in the door and is like, oh, no, he's right here.
Well, and what was it in storage specifically that he felt he needed that made him look in there?
Right, just walk in and look in that one spot.
I know that some people will, like, leave stuff in their campers and go get it during, you know, whatever, like, during the off camping season, and they'll go grab it or, like, need supplies and be like, well, we have some in the camper, I can just grab it and replace it later. But it is very odd that he just randomly decided to go into the camper and just specifically go straight for storage.
And to your point, it wasn't even anything where he was, like, looking for something or trying to get something out of storage when this happened. So there were news cameras out there filming everything, and people were out searching specifically for Justin at this point.
Okay.
So then he just walks in and, oh, there he is. So then people wondered if Justin's body had been moved to that location.
Right.
But if that's the case, of course, who did it? On the day Justin was found, the temperature reached 80 degrees, but someone that was present when his body was found said he was cold as ice, which did lead people to believe for some time that his body had been frozen and then moved there. However, the medical examiner did not mention finding evidence of this.
Okay.
So I do not believe that that's the case. The official cause of Justin's death was ruled to be strangulation with a ligature, and it was believed that he died on or around the early morning of March 3rd, 1989, after being sexually assaulted with a cylindrical object. He was found with his pants down, and there was a clump of animal fur in his hand.
What?
I don't know. That hasn't been explained. I just saw that in a few different articles that there was animal fur in his hand.
Okay.
So my assumption, based on what we hear later, because there is talk of a leash, so I'm thinking they had a dog.
Okay.
The autopsy showed that he died shortly after consuming his last meal. A forensic pathologist's report mentioned the possibility that Justin died close to the time that he was last seen alive. CBS News reported that his stepmother, Megan Turner, claimed that she did not see Justin get on the school bus that day like normal because she was taking a shower. But they did get into an argument before he left. Now, I know a lot of people are like, why on earth would a kindergartner be getting on the bus while his stepmom is in the shower? So, like, he's doing this on his own.
I'm pretty sure you said this was like 1980 something, right?
It's 1989.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's a very small town.
Right.
So I do think that those things need to be factored in.
It's not uncommon.
Right. Also, Megan Turner used to be known as Pamela Turner.
Okay.
So we'll get to that later.
Oh.
But it was kind of confusing because the articles go back and forth, and I was like, you know what? She legally changed her name, so I guess we're going with Megan.
Man, they just need to fucking pick one. I hate when they do that. It confuses the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days.
Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, a.k.a. the drag queen, That Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit, bitch, and be fierce on a huge-ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on The Big Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On The Big Cunty Couch. Mwah.
So Justin's father said that he did not see his son get on the bus because he was already at work that day. That morning, Justin ate a bowl of cereal, got dressed for school, and was supposed to leave before 11 o'clock to walk across the road to the Smith home, where he was best friends with a kid named Justin Smith. So the two Justins would get on the bus together. That afternoon, Megan said that she went to the school bus to meet Justin and he was not on it. So that was when she realized that something was wrong. He was missing. Justin's best friend remembered the last time that they hung out. He said that Justin was acting very nervous and he asked him what was wrong. Justin explained that he wasn't allowed to be playing at his house and he was not supposed to leave his yard because he was going to get into trouble.
Okay.
And we have no idea what this would have meant. Okay. At first, the police believed that Justin's disappearance was due to a parental abduction, and so they contacted his biological mother, Elaine Pace. As they began looking at the evidence, investigators set their sights on Justin's stepmother, Megan, who was the last person to report seeing him alive. They said there was no doubt in their minds that she was involved, but they were trying to build the case, and the information got leaked to reporters. Once that happened, they were blocked from talking to Megan, and it really hurt the investigation. There was another major obstacle that they had to deal with. Then Berkeley County Coroner William B. Smith Jr. was 21 years old, and Sidney Wren, the sheriff's chief investigator, partially blames him for messing up the investigation in a big way. Wren brought the coroner into the office and asked him not to do anything until they had completed their investigation. He acted like, yeah, that's totally fine. But the very next day, the news media said, coroner calls big inquest. It really screwed the case up, and the investigator believes that politics had a lot to do with this.
So annoying when people do that.
It really is, because
like, it literally is a child.
To get involved in something like that, and because of these actions that happened in the investigation, that could be the reason why this has gone on so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a serious thing, and they just don't take it seriously always, like the people that do that specifically.
It's very frustrating. So the coroner was planning to run for sheriff of Berkeley County, so he was doing everything that he could to make the sheriff's office look bad, and he saw the opportunity and he ran with it. Wren needed Justin's biological mother, Elaine Pace, to help connect some of the evidence that Justin's grandmother, so that's Victor's mother, had been providing them. Elaine actually refused to talk to Wren because the coroner had interfered so much. There were allegations that Megan Turner had family working for the sheriff's office, and there were rumors of a romantic affair with someone in law enforcement. According to family members, Elaine just didn't trust the investigators anymore when she was hearing all of this. Wren wasn't able to find anyone that Megan was connected to. It was just all really terrible, messy rumors. Before Justin went missing, he spoke to his mother, Elaine, on the phone the night before. He spoke to her every night, but this time it was different. He told his mother that he had to tell her something really important when she picked him up. Then his stepmother snatched the phone out of his hand and wouldn't let him talk anymore. So Ren wondered if Justin was about to spill a secret that Megan didn't want everyone to know.
Okay, I'm feeling like that because you said that, like, he told his friend that they couldn't play over there.
Yes.
And that already was, like, I mean, that happens all the time, but, like, given the situation...
It's weird.
It's weird. And then him saying that, like, he needed to tell her something.
Well, and something that he couldn't tell her on the phone. Like,
right.
What kid is going to be like, oh, I have a secret I have to tell you in person when you pick me up?
No, 5-year-olds are not great at secrets, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it feels very strange. Like, that could be a potential motive, if it's true. The day after Justin's body was found, Ren drove Megan and Victor Turner to SLED, South Carolina Law Enforcement Division headquarters in Columbia, so that they could take polygraph tests. Ren said that Megan lied on every question, and she refused to cooperate. He said she had taken Valium prior to the exam, which you cannot do. So Ren had to make arrangements for her to take the test the following day. Unfortunately, that's when the Berkeley County Sheriff, M.C. Cannon, disclosed to the media that Megan was a suspect in the case, and she refused to cooperate.
Of course.
So once she heard that, she got a lawyer, and they advised her not to take that test. Victor's mother met up with her son to try to convince him to tell Ren the full story. They felt like he knew more about his son's murder than what he was saying. Justin's stepmother, Megan, was arrested in late 1989, but she was released in November 1990, and the charges were dropped due to lack of evidence. A case was taken to the grand jury in 1992, but no indictments were returned. Megan's lawyer said that more than half of the testimony was inadmissible or irrelevant. Witnesses spoke about their suspicions, so there was no concrete evidence. It was just like, oh, we suspect this is what's going on. And then there was talk about somebody that was having psychic visions. The grand jury urged state legislators to change the law to force spouses to testify against each other. After the charges were dismissed, the couple moved away. So this is when Megan Turner, well, this is when Mrs. Turner changed her name from Pamela to Megan. And they never asked the authorities about the investigation again. So what? Justin's parents moved away and never called.
That's fucking weird.
To check in on the investigation ever again.
No, that's weird. That's very weird.
No matter how you slice it.
There is no, yeah.
I can't look past that one.
No. It's your 5-year-old child.
Right.
Any parent would be calling non-fucking stop.
You would think so. Because you want to know if there's been any movement. What's new? What's going on with the case? Are you still looking at it?
Yeah.
You know? Anything. But no. Never called again.
No, that's really weird.
Mm-hmm. 2 years after Justin's murder, Herald Journal published an article about a Berkeley County boy who was then 6 years old and told his mother and counselors that he saw a man wrap his hand around Justin's mouth and pull him into a waiting car. He even drew a picture of him. But since Justin's body had been found in a pickup truck camper outside the home, psychiatrists believed that he had imagined it, and the police just dismissed the story without talking to him.
Oh, boy. Okay.
There's a little more to it, though, too.
Okay.
So his mother said that he was very traumatized over what he saw, and he was just starting to go outside alone again. His mother also had fears for their safety and said that she had been receiving several anonymous calls where she was being threatened. The boy said that Justin walked out of his house and down his driveway towards a pine tree. A man stood up from behind a 4-foot pile of dirt that was about 50 feet away. Justin seemed to know the man and walked towards him as if he had been called over there. The man put his hands over Justin's mouth and took Justin to a gray car. The boy described the man as having black hair that was partially spiked, shorter than 6'2", and heavier than 150 pounds. His mother absolutely believes he witnessed Justin being taken away and said that he had not forgotten any of the details over the 2 years and his story never changed.
And that's oddly specific.
It is. And it's a very interesting story for a small child.
Right.
The day Justin's body was found is when the boy mentioned what he saw, and he was taken to Medical University Hospital where 3 psychiatrists interviewed him for at least an hour.
Okay, and that was literally right when he was found.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
See, that really says something.
Now, 2 of the psychiatrists believed he was making the story up. They thought that he had been watching the news reports and was getting confused about what happened, but the police say that they did look for a man that fit the description that the boy had provided. Former Sheriff's Lieutenant Jim Preacher said they didn't overlook the information that the boy was providing, but they were really concerned about his emotional trauma. So instead of speaking to the boy, they let the child psychiatrists talk to him. So that's why it looked like they were kind of ignoring the situation, is because they wanted to get the information from the psychiatrists.
Right.
So they didn't, like, mess him up even more, you know, add to that trauma. In 2014, Justin Turner's case was revived when a tip came in. On February 16th, 2016, several of his family members had a meeting with Sheriff Dwayne Lewis. The plan was to use new technology and put fresh eyes on the case.
Okay, several of his family members, but let me guess, not the parents?
It was absolutely not the parents.
See, that is not normal.
It was like a bunch of his cousins.
I mean, everybody reacts their own way to grief, but I just don't see that happening, like, just letting it go and letting his, like, because clearly the rest of his family cares enough to be like, some, like, we got to figure this out.
If this was anybody in my family, you wouldn't be able to keep me away.
Right.
From that meeting.
Same.
A press release by the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office stated that it had been over 3 decades since Justin's body had been discovered, but on January 10th, 2024, the police apprehended Justin's father, Victor Lee Turner, and stepmother, Megan R. Turner, previously known as Pamela K. Turner.
Jesus, okay, you really meant it's ongoing. Like, it's...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
It's right there.
This is a fresh case. They were apprehended at their residence in Cross Hill, South Carolina, and were charged with Justin Turner's murder. The search warrant for the couple's arrest said that Megan provided misinformation to investigators about her specific whereabouts on the morning of Justin's murder, and she provided inconsistent information about her activities. When the news crew had been filming in 1989, Justin's father was seen crying, but the arrest warrant highlighted the inconsistencies in Victor Turner's behavior, particularly in the footage where he located his son's body. The press release by the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office stated that the cold case unit reevaluates cases for, quote, new information or the application of new technology that may be useful in solving crimes.
Right.
In April of 2021, the cold case file of Justin Turner was reviewed. The physical evidence gathered from the crime scene and the autopsy were re-examined and submitted to forensic pathologists and the SLUD lab for analysis. Sheriff Lewis said, quote, "We have dedicated detectives who are committed to reviewing and investigating criminal cases where factors have prevented a timely resolution of justice. These detectives have worked hard to be sure that the life of Justin Lee Turner is remembered and that his murderers are brought to justice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. During the press release, the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office thanked the Lawrence County Sheriff's Office, SLED, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the Ninth Circuit Solicitor's Office, and all of the investigators who formerly worked on the case. A leash, which was believed to be the murder weapon, was located at the Turner's residence. New forensic testing enabled investigators to match the ligature to the marks on Justin's body, and the fibers found on it were matched to the material on the collar of his shirt. Forensic technology was used to match fibers found in the house with Justin's clothing. There was no debris or other matter on his body, clothing, or shoes, which suggested he had been carried from the house to the camper.
Yep.
According to the arrest affidavits released on January 10th, after the Turners learned investigators had collected the ligature from their home, they expressed concern and tried to withhold potential evidence. The Turners appeared virtually at a bond hearing before Magistrate Judge Brian West. Amy Parsons was only 8 years old when her cousin Justin was murdered. She spoke on behalf of her family to say, quote, "For 35 years, you have enjoyed your freedom. You do not deserve one day outside of those prison walls for what you did to Justin. You were supposed to take care of him, love him, and instead, you tortured, abused, and murdered him, your child. It takes a sick individual to do what you did." Sheriff Lewis has not provided a timeline for the prosecution's case, but he said, quote, "I'm hoping and I'm praying that Justin is looking down from heaven, rejoicing that today there's some justice. There's still some justice in this country."
Damn!
So that is all of the information that I currently have on this case. It's definitely going to be one that we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Yeah!
Because I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
I'm invested now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to need updates.
So, yes, we will be following this one.
Jeez.
And, you know, if anything comes up, like any big revelations in this case, if someone's watching it, please email it over to me so that I can take a look and we can do some updates.
Yeah, when you said it was recent, like, they just recently cracked it back open. I wasn't expecting, like, literally a few, like, freaking days ago, like.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, no, this one's very, very recent. It's another one that Dad sent over to me.
What? He's on a roll lately.
I know. So he's like, "Hey, look into this one." And I was like, "Okay."
What is he doing?
I don't know, but it's very helpful.
Yeah.
I really like it. So, yeah, that is, I know that was a much shorter one than we do usually, but I still want to cover these kinds of cases,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, abso-freaking-lutely.
So.
Yeah, and I'm invested now. I need to know if anything comes out, I need to know.
Yeah, I hope that they get some confessions and figure out who was involved and who was not involved and what actually happened and get some justice for this child.
Right.
All right, so make sure to follow us on any of your podcast apps. Tell us the stories you want to hear. Like us on Facebook, X, Instagram. Leave us a 5-star review if you love us. Tell your friends. Tell your cats. Bye. Bye.